Coming up on Broadway Videos this week on Broadway, we talk about The Tempest at the Delacorte Theater, Chris Sieber at Birdland, The Bluest Ink, which is a Sondheim review, Brian D'Arcy James at 54 Below, and Cuba Gooding Jr. at Tony's DiNapoli. We also talk about the Hands on a Hardbody CD launch at Barnes & Noble, a full preview of what we're going to be seeing, and Il Divo. Please stay tuned. Someone's bound for glory.
Truck is bona fide, but only one can grab that ring.
And God alone knows what he'll bring.
It's a human drama kind of thing.
Hello and welcome to Broadway Radio's This Week on Broadway for Sunday, September 8th, 2013. My name is James Marino, and on the broadcast this morning we have Aileen McKenna and Michael Portantier. Aileen is a writer for The Craptacular. You might have visited her website at thecraptacular.com, where they write about all things Broadway. And how else would you summarize it, Aileen?
Write about cute boys and theater.
Cute boys and theater. I think that sums it up right there. That's your elevator pitch right there.
Yeah, right there.
And then everybody just clicked off the podcast and went to The Craptacular because they thought, cute boys and theater, what else do I need? So... Also with us is Michael Portantier. Michael is a theater reviewer and essayist. His work appears at Talk on Broadway, the Sondheim Review, and Broadway Stars. He is also a photographer whose work can be seen at followspotphoto.com as well as many of the places on the internet. Good morning, Michael.
Morning.
Good morning. So we're going to start off by welcoming back everybody into the fall. We took a week off. We missed you guys last week, but we hope that you did get a chance to not only listen to our podcast, but if you missed us a lot, you can go back into the archives. If you go to our show page, every podcast we've ever done, I think there's about 250, more than 250 of them now. You can go back and listen to them. So Aileen got a chance to see The Tempest on Friday in Central Park, and it's a little bit different. So Aileen, tell us about what's different about this production and how was it?
I think everything was different about this production. The concept was it's part of this public works program that they're doing, that they're really involving a lot of community groups in the production and performance of this show. So for example, there were like student dancers from Ballet Tech and a local Mexican dance company and a local brass band. And so there were all these different groups and lots of like hundreds of ensemble members from different community centers and senior centers around the city. But also it was an hour and 45 minute like condensed musical version of The Tempest. So it was also very different materially. And it was actually really, really cool. I'm super glad that I got the chance to see it. They were only doing like three performances this weekend at the Delacorte, and having the opportunity to kind of see what they were doing and what kind of journey they were taking with the show was awesome. The adaptation was actually quite good. I think probably if they take it elsewhere or they continue to use it, they'll probably work on it. But it was a fun concept. The music was by Todd Almond, who also played Ariel. And it was very tongue-in-cheek at times and youthful, had a little bit of an Alex Timbers vibe. But it was great fun. And it, at the end of the show, I felt like I had a little bit like I had just seen like a pageant at like the local community center. But at the same time, it was really a joyful celebration of theater and what theater can be. And I think a lot of people were exposed to Shakespeare and really traditional theater and got to see that it can be fun and interesting and relevant. And so that was really cool. It was a little crazy, but it was a good kind of crazy, I think.
Well, I haven't seen it, and I'm afraid I'm going to miss it. But our friend Michael Dale, I noticed this morning, wrote on Facebook, or maybe it was yesterday's, he wrote something wonderful to the effect of... I guess Norm Lewis has one of the leads in the show, yes?
Yeah, he plays Prospero.
Yeah, and he and Michael wrote something to the effect that something to the effect of sitting in a theater now and listening to Norm Lewis sing must be like our parents or grandparents listening to Alfred Drake. And I thought that was such a great thing to write. And I completely agree. Norm Lewis is, one of the great musical theater performers of our time with a truly amazing voice. So I'm sorry, I'm going to miss him in this.
Yeah, he was lovely. I mean, they had only a couple like Actors Equity actors, and it was very largely actors, I think, from community theaters and stuff like that. And was one of the five. It was great.
So that's awesome. That how did you end up going to it? Did you just say, "Oh, there's Shakespeare in the Park, and I'm going to go to it"? Were you understanding that it was not what you traditionally expect when we go to see the public theater?
They had been, I think, pretty good about explaining in the lead up the like emails that I get from the public that where they talked about this huge project and how they were involving, 200 actors from different communities in New York. And they had been pretty good about explaining it. So I knew to some extent, I knew it was going to be a musical. I knew it was going to be shorter and I knew there was going to be a lot of community involved, but I had no idea where it was going to go. I probably would have either done, you could have done the virtual lottery or like a standby, sort of like a traditional Shakespeare in the Park production. I ended up going with a friend who's in the Young Partners program, at the public. So we went to a little reception before and then we went to see the show, which I'm sure helped my enjoyment of the show immensely, several glasses of wine. But, it was really very joyful. I didn't really have a lot of expectation going in, and it definitely, I don't know what they'll be able to do in the future or how they'll handle this going forward, but, or if they even care to, but it really was there were women behind us who I could just tell from the tone were not super familiar with this show beforehand, but they were there to support friends who were, in the ensemble, and listening to them experience Shakespeare was so cool. And we kind of got to go on the journey with them of being like, wow, this is great. It was really, really fun.
So it sounds like it was a really good thing. Do you think it's going to happen again? We have to say that this was at the Delacorte, and it was produced by the public in a subsection of the public called the Public Works.
Yeah. The program.
And did you see anything about there being future productions like this next year, maybe the year after?
I'm not sure, but I believe that was the sense that I got, was that they would continue this program and do perhaps different shows or more shows, but that this was a program that the public, this was like a first run, but that this is something that they would like to do again. I mean, they refer to this as the inaugural performance of the program. So I think they're going to keep at this.
Great. All right. So let's move on. Next, Michael got to see Chris Sieber at Birdland. And Michael, tell us about that.
Yes, it was last Monday, September 2nd at 7 at Birdland. And it was a terrific show. I planned at the very last minute to go, and I'm so glad I did. He had me at hello, as you might say, because he started, his opening number was Here I Am from Dirty Rotten Scoundrels, that fantastic David Yazbek number that Sherry Renee Scott introduced. I love that show, and I've always thought that would be a fantastic opening number for an act. I don't know if Chris is the first one to use it, but whatever. It was absolutely great. And he's so charming. I assume he wrote all of his own patter, and it was very, very funny. He actually, a running joke, this may sound odd, was about how he's sustained minor injuries in various shows, and I'm sure it wasn't funny at the time. But as I say, they were not severe injuries and with no long lasting effects. So I guess in retrospect, you can look back and say how, oh, gee, that was kind of funny. And certainly the way he told the stories, they were hilarious, and the audience loved it. And he just did a great show. A lot of interesting stories about Oh, he told one interesting story about he was supposed to go back into Chicago on Broadway as Billy Flynn, a role he had done before. And as he got up to the box office to get his ticket, his cell phone rang, and it was his agent or manager saying, no, you're not going to see Chicago today. You're going to see La Cage aux Folles, the revival, which was actually the same producers, the Weislers. And it turns out that Jeffrey Tambor had just very abruptly left the show in the role of Georges. And so Chris went to see the show, like, not fully understanding what was happening. And then he went backstage afterwards to see Harvey Fierstein, whom he knew. And Harvey basically begged him to take over for Jeffrey Tambor. So Chris did. And I saw that. I saw the two of them in it. And it was really, they were so terrific together. I'll never forget it. And then Chris was offered, what he said was that he and Harvey were offered to go on tour in the show, but Harvey didn't do it for several reasons, including the fact that I guess he was working on both Newsies and Kinky Boots. So Chris went out in the opposite role of Albin, the drag queen, opposite George Hamilton. And Chris had a lot of funny stories about George Hamilton too. So it was a delightful evening, and I'm really glad I went. We've been talking a lot about 54 Below lately, and rightly so, because they have amazing people there, as I think Aileen will mention later on. But I don't want to forget Birdland, because they've always had terrific Broadway, you know, musical theater type people, especially on Monday nights before Jim Caruso's cast party, which is a sort of an open, really terrific, amazing open mic event. But they have a lot of great Broadway people, and very, very reasonable prices, which is always important to state in cases like this. So keep your eye out. If you, I'm not sure when this podcast is going to be posted, but tomorrow night, Monday, September 9th at 7, we have Steven Brinberg doing his Simply Barbara show. And this one's going to be a tribute to Marvin Hamlisch, with whom Steven worked actually many times in concerts all over the country. And Steven's guest is going to be Eric Altemus from Pippin.
Oh, he's handsome.
Yeah, and Eric plays Lewis in Pippin, but he's also the understudy for the title role, and I know he's gone on at least once so far. And if you go to see Steven's show, or if you get to see him go on as Pippin someday, you'll hear what an amazing, beautiful voice he has. He doesn't really get to use it very much at all as Lewis. I think maybe it's one line in the opening number and maybe one line in the finale. But even then, you can hear really gorgeous voice. He played the boy in The Fantastics, the current production, for some time. And unfortunately, I did not see him in that, but I wish I had, because it's just a really a beautiful voice. So wanted to put that on your calendar, and if you get to hear this in time.
You know that girl that we talk about sometimes that has three names? Her name is Jennifer Ashley Tepper. she started, was it this week? She's now the
Tuesday.
She's the program director at 54 Below now?
Yeah, she's the director of programming.
And she left the nest from Davenport Theatricals to do that. And she's striking out. And I'm telling you, watch out for her. She is going places. Well, she is somewhere already, but she's going other places, many places. She's going to be big. She's going to be huge. So that's great. I'm glad that you had mentioned that. So next up, going a little bit off of our beaten path here, is that Aileen got to see something called The Bluest Ink, a multimedia review staged in concert featuring the music and lyrics of Stephen Sondheim. So tell us, Aileen, tell us what this was and what you think.
The Bluest Ink was very much as you described. It was a Sondheim review, and there was also projections, like really interesting ink drawing projections that helped tell the story. And it was really, the actors were all quite young. They were in their, I think everyone involved with the show, like top to bottom, was under the age of 25. All the people who did the arrangements, the direction, everything. Everyone was under 25. And the story that the director, Max Friedman, who also conceived the show, was looking to tell, he wanted to tell a story for millennials and about millennials using Sondheim's music, because he really felt that Sondheim's music spoke to the millennial generation as well as, you know, any previous generation. And he wanted to show that continued life of and in Sondheim's music. And this was, I think, their first production of this. The music and arrangements were done by Charlie Rosen, who people might remember from Bloody Bloody Andrew Jackson. He was in the bass player in the band in Bloody Bloody Andrew Jackson. He was he played bass in a band in Love Labor's Lost in the Park this summer. But he's also composed music for Cyrano de Bergerac on Broadway last year, and he was in the band in One Man, Two Governors. And Charlie is someone also to keep an eye on, because he is ridiculously talented as a young arranger and composer and musician. And he redid all the arrangements for this in like a jazzy style, and they were wonderful. The music sounded, you know, fantastic. The choices that he made were really smart and relevant and really worked. And it was six people in the jazz band, and it was wonderful. The story is still in its fledgling state. I think they had initially conceived it to have two acts, and they knocked it down to one for the show. But it really, the music held up, and it tells an interesting story, and I'll be very curious to see where it goes, especially anything involving Charlie Rosen. We kind of watch pretty closely over at the Craptacular, because he's just really, he's like the up and coming. He's going to be, you know, Stephen Arimus someday, or, you know, he's wonderful. So that was really cool to get to see that in an early stage.
So that's great. And is this something that you think could be commercially viable? Could it move on?
I think they would like to do the show again, potentially in like a small off, or like an off Broadway house, or a smaller.
Did you mention that it was at Le Poisson Rouge?
Yeah, I don't know if I did, sorry. But yeah, it was at Le Poisson Rouge, and they just did a one-night concert. But I think the creators of the show really, really love the material and are really looking to see the material have additional life. And it may yet, particularly, again, just I cannot say enough good stuff about Charlie Rosen, and his arrangements for that show were great. They were beautiful. So it would be exciting to see what he can do with more time and more music.
The toughest thing about, in my opinion, toughest thing about doing a Sondheim review is pulling out, you know, the right music and not too much music, because if you did a Sondheim review of the hits, it could be 6 hours, you know?
Yeah. And they got it down to like, I think it was, you know, in the range of 90 minutes, I mean, or, you know, less. It was quite tight, and you could see that there was more story in there that they wanted to tell, and it would be good to see them get a chance to tell more story and have a little more time with the characters, because there definitely was a story arc in there, and they just need a little more time to develop it. And the song sounded great, so it's hard to be mad when you hear Sondheim sounding good, you know?
Absolutely. All right, so next up on the agenda is also Aileen got a chance to see Brian D'Arcy James at 54 Below. So we just mentioned 54, but tell us, how was Brian?
Oh, Brian D'Arcy hotness. He was he was fantastic. It was like a spur of the moment decision. The night before, a friend was like, "Hey, I have a ticket. Do you want to come?" And I was like, "Sure," because I love Brian D'Arcy James. Who doesn't? But he was wonderful. He was like, I guess this is his return engagement at 54 Below. He did a show very much like this one, you know, several months back, I suppose. I didn't get a chance to see it. And he, I think, added at least a song or two and tightened things up a little bit. But God, he can sing. I mean, he just is wonderful. And he actually has, you know, great presence, and he can, you know, banter with the audience, and he really is wonderful. And listening to him sing, like, nothing has made me happier than listening to Brian D'Arcy James sing Billy Joel. I mean, Be Still My Long Island Born and Bred Heart. I was so happy to be there the other night. It was great.
Well, as you may know, you probably do know, Aileen, Brian is going to be in the Macbeth at Lincoln Center. Did you know that?
I did. That cast, actually, they added a great cast. I'm a little ticked off because now I have to go see it.
Why are you ticked off?
Oh, God, I've already seen Macbeth like 1,000 times in years.
I think we discussed
talking about that recently. A couple weeks ago. Yeah.
And I love Macbeth is actually my favorite Shakespeare. I really, it's really taut and tight and
action-packed.
And I really do love Macbeth, but good Lord, have we seen a few Macbeths lately and not all of them for the better. And I just wasn't super excited about Ethan Hawke as Macbeth personally. But that the rest of that cast, I mean, they have,
well, yes. Do you want to do it?
We have. No, you go for it, Michael. You take it.
Well, I have the list in front. We have Daniel Sunjata as Macbeth. We have. I'm just giving the big names here. Byron Jennings is one of the witches. Johnny Orsini is Malcolm. Most recently seen in with Nathan Lane in what's the title?
The Nance.
The Nance went out of my head. Sorry. Let's see here. Malcolm Getz is another of the witches. John Glover is the third of the witches. They're having male witches, if you haven't figured that out. And let's see. Shireen Babb is Macbeth attendant. Richard Easton is Duncan. It's quite a cast. So, yep.
Daniel Sunjata, man. Brian D'Arcy James, Daniel Sunjata on the same stage. They're going to melt it.
I guess you'll be there.
I will be living there.
We'll have to make sure that we, when after that happens, we'll have you back on and you tell us what if it met expectations there.
If I survive.
Yeah, exactly. Or if we're going to be reading about you in the New York Post.
Yeah, you might read about me in the Post before you can get me back on the radio because someone might have to like drag me off the stage. Yeah.
Alrighty. So,
the way, on the Hunk Alert meter, and I haven't seen it yet, but I'm seeing a show tonight at New York Theater Workshop, Aileen, called Fetch Clay, Make Man, which is about. It sounds really interesting. It's about Muhammad Ali's. When he was young and still, I guess, named Cassius Clay, with his friendship with Stepin Fetchit, who was a sort of played like stock, shuffling sort of kind of stereotypical Negro characters. And that sounds really interesting. But I'm told the fellow in the lead, whose name I don't have in front of me, is quite something. And you know, we've had quite a few shows lately that haven't we, that were either boxing related or just have had displays of male flesh in them, haven't we?
There actually has been a lot of boxing. You're right.
Yes, Golden Boy, and I didn't see it, but was it boxing? The elaborate entrance of Chad Deity.
I think there was definitely a big boxing
or wrestling, maybe it was something like that. That's a little mini trend that seems to be going. Even Encores did, it was a while ago, but Encores did the musical of Golden Boy. So
And Rocky is like bearing down upon us.
Yes. How could I forget?
Oh, can't forget anything that Alex Timbers does.
Why, someone pointed out though, Rocky is Alex Timbers?
He's directing, yeah.
Oh, gosh. Yeah, someone pointed out they released some kind of a commercial for it that unfortunately doesn't say anything about it being a musical.
Oversight.
Yeah, that might be a salient point to mention. Maybe they'll fix that in future commercials.
So, I have to ask Aileen, I've never asked you this before. Are you a fan of this Il Divo thing?
I just saw this the other day, and what is going on?
What exactly do you mean? Il Divo.
It's a singing group.
Or is it? Are they doing a sit down? They're going to stay for a while. I just saw the headline.
Yeah, you know they are coming to. They're coming to Broadway with Heather Headley.
Oh, Heather Headley.
And.
I'm sorry.
They're doing a limited Broadway concert engagement this fall at the Marquee. And they start November 7th. And I've seen Il Divo sing on like the Today Show or something like that with, I've never really followed them. But is this a good fit for the Broadway audience? Do you think that these are hunky guys? Or
I think
they just look like plain fraternity boys. You know, I don't know. Maybe I'm wrong.
One of them.
But they're like Italian, which really changes things.
Oh, they come from Italy. That's what's different.
Think so. They're like not American. They are not American men. So that really ups the sexy quotient by like. And also they sing opera. Look, I love a good boy band, which I think is effectively what these men are. I would personally rather see One Direction on Broadway. I would be excited about it. I would see Il Divo. And Heather Headley. We wanted to see her in The Bodyguard in London so badly, and we bought tickets and saw The Bodyguard in London, and she was not in that night, and we were like, I was shattered. So I really want to see Heather Headley. So I would do that.
Well, yeah, apparently she missed a tremendous amount of performances there.
Yeah. Michael, you were saying something about Il Divo.
Well, first of all, yeah, to clarify, one of them is American. His name is David Miller, and he was one of the Rodolfos when they did the Baz Luhrmann production of La Boheme on Broadway.
Oh.
And Il Divo they sang with Streisand in one of her concerts. They do some Broadway music, I believe, sometimes, you know, although their own special versions of it. And of course, Simon Cowell is the creator of Il Divo. So, I guess whatever he wants, he can have done. I didn't know about this. I don't think I heard about this Broadway engagement. That's really interesting. And I wonder what the long-term plans are for The Bodyguard. I certainly haven't heard anything imminent about it coming to Broadway, but I can imagine it will at some point. I wonder.
I don't know, man. It was real bad. It's one of the worst things I've ever seen.
Yeah.
I say that, like, I don't say that, like, it was, I still don't know how it ended. It's been like almost a year since I saw it, and I still am not sure how it ended. And I can't imagine, to your point, Michael, I cannot imagine that they're not going to attempt.
Oh, yeah. No, regardless of
big American property.
Now, yeah. You saw it, so maybe you can help me here. You know how in Blood Brothers they kept on repeating that Marilyn Monroe song in Blood Brothers?
Yes.
So I'm wondering, do they keep on repeating the whole I Will Always Love You in The Bodyguard? Is that a theme that runs throughout the entire show?
I don't remember musically if they repeat it, but it does appear, the song does appear twice. The first time, as if to defy your expectation, they do the bodyguard himself sings a country, like the Dolly Parton version of the song in a karaoke bar.
Awesome.
So that was ridiculous. It was not good.
For folks out here that are still confused about the Il Divo thing, I put a video of Il Divo on the show notes page at BroadwayRadio.com, and they basically, the four boys talk to you with underscoring of Phantom of the Opera music.
Oh, so, that's craptacular.
Yeah, that is craptacular. So we'll see what happens. And insofar as it affecting Heather Headley, I'm not sure. It seems like a very short run on Broadway. And I don't know if she's actually going with them other than to the Broadway engagement. So we'll have to see as we get deeper into this. So Michael attended a character
signing
of Cuba Gooding Jr.?
Not caricatures. This is at Tony's DiNapoli restaurant on 43rd Street. They've for several years now they've had portraits, oil portraits,
okay.
Of various Broadway stars by a very talented artist named Daniel May. Then they have quite a collection of them by now, and they're up on the walls there. You should really stop in there sometime. It's Tony's DiNapoli on 43rd Street, just east of Broadway. This unveiling on August 27th was right after the final performance of Cuba Gooding Jr. in A Trip to Bountiful, which actually is playing right across the street at what is now called the Stephen Sondheim Theater. So he was there, and it was really fun. Most of these the events there are very fun because they're much more informal than similar types of events in other places. They start pretty late. By the time we got there, Cuba was already there, and I think he already had a drink or two, and he seemed like he was in a very, very good mood, very, very friendly. And he got up and gave a really wonderful speech about how much the show meant to him, and the portrait was unveiled, and it was a really, really good one. And let's see. Oh, I got to speak with Michael Wilson, who directed Trip to Bountiful there. And Michael, his point, he's had quite a year because he directed Tally's Folly at the Roundabout with Danny Burstein, and then Trip to Bountiful. And now he's doing The Old Friends. Another Horton Foot play. So that's Michael Wilson's is really doing very well at the moment. But also one of the amusing things about this event at Tony's was that Cicely Tyson was not there at the start or for most of the event, and there were a lot of photographers there taking pictures, snap, and in fact one of them even complained, gee, the theater's right across the street. Couldn't Cicely have stopped over just for a minute? So everyone was packing up. The photographers were kind of packing up to leave. And suddenly we hear from the corner, Cuba Gooding say, "Ladies and gentlemen, Miss Cicely Tyson." And so all the photographers unpack their cameras and ran back over to that side of the room and snapped. And she posed with him. And that was really fun. So it was quite a charming event.
You have to point out that that not only are the portraits very good, but I've eaten there a few times and the food is pretty good if you like Italian.
It really is. It's a wonderful place. The only thing is, it's not a place you want to go if you're only one or even two people, because they serve family stuff.
Style.
But if you have even a small group with you, it's an incredibly great deal because you wind up spending very little money per person because the portions are so huge.
Yeah.
So it is quite convenient. It's one of those things where some people I never get over it. Some people discount like anything that exists east of Broadway because they think it's like in another county, which is so silly. For some reason, it's a psychological thing. But it's just east of Broadway, and it's really very convenient to lots of theaters. And
if you can't get into Carmine's, head over to Tony's.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
I had that thing that you mentioned. I could never cross Broadway to go to the east side. I was always on the west. Since Broadway travels from north to south in Manhattan, that held true almost across the whole thing. But, Aileen's an east side girl, aren't you, Aileen?
I am an east side girl.
You're an east side girl. So tell us about, speaking of the East Side, Michael got to the Hands on a Hard Body CD launch at Barnes & Noble, where they put on a few numbers and it's a continuation of our podcast from 2 weeks ago, right?
Yes, we had Amanda Green, one of the co-creators, as our guest, and she was there, and it was a terrific event. We've discussed there are fewer Barnes and Nobles than there were just a few years ago, certainly none really anywhere near the theater district. But if you have to go to East 86th Street for something like this, free event, CD signing, and they did three or four numbers from the show, and a good portion of the cast was there, including Keith Carradine. Yes, and Keela Settle, the phenomenal Keela Settle, and Jim Newman were there, and several others. No, Jay Armstrong Johnson, I'm sorry to say, Aileen.
Yes, because Jay's in California right now.
Oh, what's he doing?
He's working on The Last Goodbye with Alex Timbers.
Oh, okay. I knew you'd know.
Hey, Lynn, do you still have that restraining order? Are we still in the air? Wait, I'm sorry.
I don't need to talk about that.
Okay. Michael, continue.
She's not allowed to talk about it by court order. No. But really, it was a phenomenal event. And they sang to tracks, the tracks from the orchestral tracks from the CD, which, you know, I don't always think that's a good idea. But in a case like this, where it's a CD launch, yeah, I think it's just fine. And it sounded great. The sound was fantastic. They got a very good crowd. I guess they were afraid that they might not get a good crowd because the show didn't run long and it's been closed for quite some time. But no, it was packed. So that was fantastic. And I really do love that score. I got the CD that day, and I'm really going to be listening to it a lot. I'm so sorry that show did not run longer. It really makes me sad because I think there was no good reason why it didn't run longer, except that it didn't have maybe any huge stars in it, and people were unfamiliar with the subject matter, and I don't know, maybe it wasn't marketed well. I don't know.
We talked about that with Amanda briefly. You know, I was shocked that they didn't do a Hands on a Hard Body giveaway in Times Square. You know, I was shocked, you know, and perhaps it wasn't at the same, you know, you talk about the invasion of the British musicals when the star of the show was the chandelier and the helicopter and the turntable. The star of the show was the hard body. And they could have done more to capitalize on that. And hopefully we'll see it live a longer life in the regions. And perhaps, you know, in 20 years from now, we'll be talking about a revival.
I hope so. I mean, it really, the score is just great. And I think the book was fantastic, too. I just thought when I saw it, it seemed to me that I noticed some flaws while it was happening. But in retrospect, I can't really even remember what they were. So I guess they really were very unimportant. And what lasts is the score. And it's fantastic that I talked about the song that I've now learned the title for. Fortunately, it's called Used to Be. And it's this absolutely heartbreaking song about how, you know, all of the mom and pop businesses in the entire country, there are so few of them left, and they've been replaced by big box stores and franchises that are exactly the same in every place that you go. So aside from the fact that no particular city or town has any personal character anymore, it affected the employability, and it's just the economic effects of it are tremendous. I mean, we don't have to, I think, you know, elaborate further on Walmart and the way they pay their people. So this song is about, you know, it's about Walmart, Walgreens, and what they call Mickey D's, McDonald's, and how they, you know, I mean, those things are fine as long as they don't completely obliterate the corner drugstore or the corner bookstore or the corner restaurant. So I really think it's one of the greatest musical theater songs to be written in a very long time, and you owe it to yourself to hear the whole score is great, but that song in particular, you just really please seek it out somehow, because it's absolutely beautiful and heartbreaking.
So I think that we've talked about this before in passing, but what you said was interesting, Michael, that you couldn't remember what was not great about the show. Right. And I had this experience with Passion, when Passion first opened on Broadway, I went to opening night, and I really didn't like it. Mm-hmm. And then the reviews came out, word of mouth, everybody loved it, and I got a recording of it, and I was listening to it, and I was like, wow, this is great. I love this. And I said, I got to go back and see it again. I went back to see it again, and I was like, wow, I really hate this show.
I think you mentioned that before, and I would say, in my opinion, that's
that direction.
The direction, yes.
The direction with that was, yeah.
By James Lapine.
Yeah.
Hmm.
So, all right. So that's Hands on a Hard Body, and it's available from Shikaboom Ghostlight, and run out and grab it. I got a copy of it, and it's making its rounds on my iPhone. So I'm really enjoying it too.
You know, I hate to say it, but I think now that you mention it, I really hate to say it, but if it's not done in lots and lots of places, I think that might end up being, just for the economic reasons, that I would imagine it must be very difficult and expensive to build something that looks like it's a real hard body and put it on stage.
Well, you mean, you know, people said that about, you know, how are we ever going to do Saigon in a community theater?
That's true.
And,
you know,
you can get away with that stuff. And I tell you, every single town in America has some sort of truck dealership that they can... You know, if they're smart, get that truck up on stage.
Well, I guess that, if they have, you know, barn doors in the theater big enough to actually get it in, which I guess a lot of theaters would, that would be the best solution. And James, I don't know if you were half joking or completely joking, but I wonder if that would have helped if they did a giveaway of an actual.
I'm not joking at all. I think that they should have done that. That would have been the ultimate promo for their show.
And I mean, it's not inexpensive. How much does one of those go for?
10, 15, like 15, 20 probably for a
truck?
Yeah.
No, they're $30,000. Yeah. But the thing is.
Yeah, but that's like a simple one. That wasn't like the fanciest hard body you've ever seen.
But, you know, the thing is that if it were Nissan and they were doing it in Times Square Nissan would have donated the truck or they could have done it in Duffy Square. And it would have been an event for New York and Times Square, and it would have got, you know, it's right in front of ABC Studios. It would have gotten on Good Morning America, would have gotten on the Today Show, would have, you know, I don't know. Somebody must have thought of it. There must have been a reason why they couldn't do it.
I don't know. That would be an interesting question to ask, to ask maybe one of the producers.
Yeah. So anyway,
speaking of Duffy Square, someone just recently brought up that I guess we're not getting Broadway on Broadway again.
Oh, really?
Couldn't remember. Is this? I'm pretty sure. I'm almost positive they did not do it last year. Isn't that right?
I think they did do it last year, because I think Laura went and spoke with Anthony Warlow and.
I think 2 years ago they didn't do it. They didn't, but they did. I think they did it last year. It would have been this weekend or next weekend, right around the time of the Broadway Cares flea market, isn't it?
Yeah, it's before. It's a couple weeks before the flea market, and the flea market's on like the 21st or something this year.
Yeah, and if you're listening to this and you can check it out, the Broadway Cares Equity Fights AIDS flea market is awesome. And especially if there's good weather, come on down and meet stars and buy some memorabilia to support Broadway Cares Equity Fights AIDS. It's great.
You know, now that I think of it, no Broadway on Broadway might have something to do with. They're doing some major renovations in Times Square, continuing to make it more of a pedestrian mall. So it could be completely unrelated, or maybe that's part of the reason.
Huh.
Oh, and I just checked the date. The flea market is on Sunday the 22nd this year.
Sunday the 22nd?
Yep.
Well, let's see what the Google has to say about this. The Broadway League, Broadway on Broadway. Broadway will not take place in 2013. So the league website says it will not take place. Broadway on Broadway, the annual outdoor concert in Times Square, which has in the past taken place on Sunday after Labor Day, will not take place in 2013. Stay tuned for new updates. Well, exclamation point.
Okay. Well,
So there it is. And actually, there's a picture there, and I'm pretty sure that Laura Mott is in the front row. There it
possible.
Is.
Possible. Yeah. Even likely.
I tell you, Aileen, you got to rein that girl in.
She's just really poorly behaved.
She's unreinable, isn't she?
Yeah, just it's not possible.
Is she like in Bangladesh or something today? Because last
she's
time,
in Spain. She's in Spain. Yeah, she was in Brazil like a month ago. Now she's in Spain.
Last time we tried to have her on the podcast, she's like, "Oh, I want to, but I'm in Brazil." I'm like, "Do they have internet in Brazil? Come on."
Yeah. She's quite the jet setter. She's really, really, really leaving me here in New York to hold the fort down and enjoying the world. I'm a little jealous.
I hope she's sharing the boys.
Well, I mean.
So talking about Broadway and Broadway in the fall and everything, our Broadway season is coming up. And what do you guys think? We have a few things coming up. We have Romeo and Juliet coming up. I'm going to go see that next week. You guys looking forward to that?
Well, it certainly sounds interesting with the, you know, very high profile casting of Orlando Bloom and Condola Rashad. Then we have the other one off Broadway, which has now lost William Hurt, who had been announced for it. So there's changes in that one. Talk about Shakespeare plays reappearing. But, you know, I mean, I love Romeo and Juliet. So I hope that one or both of these will be really great.
Yeah. So what about you, Aileen? Are you planning to see Orlando?
I am more excited about the supporting cast, actually. I'm really excited about, like, Brent Carver and Jane Houdyshell and even Justin Guarinia, who I really like. I do love Orlando Bloom. I mean, who doesn't love Legolas? But I for some reason, I'm not super excited about Romeo and Juliet, the stage play, right now. I was really excited about Finn Wittrock, who was supposed to be with William Hurt in the CSC production.
But now neither of them are in it.
Yeah, now neither of them are in it. So I'm definitely going to see probably both productions. But the Romeo and Juliet that I'm excited about right now is The Last Goodbye, which is all the way out and at the Old Globe. So that's the Romeo and Juliet I'm most looking forward to seeing.
There's a lot of stuff there on the West Coast that is being developed under the radar. You know, they have that Sunshine Boys that's out on the West Coast. Justin Bartha just stepped into it because David Krumholtz left the production. So I wonder if there is a move to try to get the Sunshine Boys to come east. So we'll have to see what happens with that.
By the way, the off-Broadway Romeo and Juliet at CSC, which opens on the 16th of October and begins previews on September 27th, is fairly starry in its own right, you know, especially for off-Broadway. They've got David Garrison as Capulet. Daniel Davis has replaced William Hurt. Elizabeth Olsen is Juliet. Catherine Meisel is Lady Capulet. T.R. Knight is Mercutio. Oh. And Daphne Rubin Vega is the nurse. So, yeah, so not too shabby, really, you know.
That's great. I gotta see if we can schedule some classic stage company there. So September 26th, we have the Glass Menagerie opening.
Oh, and wait till you see it. Such a beautiful, beautiful.
And you saw that up at Art, Michael?
Yes, at the American Repertory Theater in Cambridge. Yeah.
So then we have following October 6th is Big Fish coming into the Neil Simon. Big Fish just went into previews this week, and there's a lot of people talking about it. The 10th is A Night with Janis Joplin at the Lyceum. Mm-hmm. October 17th, The Winslow Boy. October 20th, The Time to Kill at the Golden. October 24th, The Snow Geese at the Friedman. October 27th, Betrayal at the Barrymore.
That's isn't it supposedly like already like completely sold out?
Yeah, exactly.
Sold out.
Unbelievable.
We should say with Daniel Craig and Rachel Weisz and
yes.
And Rafe Spall.
Yes.
Yeah. And I wonder if we're going to be able to get press tickets for these things for Betrayal. Probably not.
Sure, they don't care.
Yeah. Exactly. November 3rd, After Midnight. And November 10th, very interesting. I had to check this with the press reps. We have two openings on November 10th. Did you know this?
No.
Richard III and Twelfth Night is opening on both at the Belasco in rep. One is the matinee, one is the evening performance.
Oh, is that what it is?
Oh, that's amazing.
I see. I thought they were just giving the 10th as as the official opening.
I went to the press reps and I'm like, you're screwing up my database on Broadway Stars. What's going on here? And she's like, both shows are opening. I'm like, how can both shows open? She goes, matinee and evening. I'm like, I'm so sorry. I'm an idiot. So, same cast in rep at the Belasco, Richard III and Twelfth Night. So, I'm
real excited about that.
Yeah.
And
it's a Shakespeare fall, isn't it?
Yeah, and it's all men.
All men, all the time. I also got some clarification from a press agent because we read a somewhat odd announcement that Natasha Pierre and the Great Comet of 1812 would be moving to Midtown. On 45th Street, and it didn't exactly say, if I recall correctly, in the press release, but it's moving not to a Broadway theater, but to the quite large vacant lot that used to be occupied by several restaurants, including Sam's and Barrymore's on 45th and it actually extends to part of 46th Street. And this is the place where the Spiegel World tent was pitched. Was that last year or not too long ago?
Yeah.
And so they had a run there. But that's where Natasha Pierre is going to be. They're going to recreate Casino, which is the name of the club that they created downtown in the Meatpacking District in basically a tent. And so they're going to recreate that. And that is where Natasha Pierre is going to be playing on 45th Street. And it is not going to be Tony eligible because it's not a Tony eligible space. I'm kind of disappointed because I really liked it, and I think it very well might have been up for and maybe even won some awards, especially performances, but also the score. It's still hopefully having it in Midtown will give it a whole new audience, and I hope it does really, really well.
On November 13th, we have Revival of 700 Sundays is coming back. It's November 17th, The Gentleman's Guide to Love and Murder at the Kerr. And then the 21st, as we talked about, Macbeth at the Beaumont. November 24th, No Man's Land at the Court. Also November 24th, Waiting for Godot. Another production that is in rep that's opening on the same day.
I didn't realize that either.
So, that's it for the fall, but we have a lot of stuff coming up in the fall. It feels like it's March, April again. You know, we have a handful of shows that we have to see. Let's see. How about 15 shows or so that we have to see in the next couple of months? So,
and that's just Broadway.
And that's just Broadway, exactly.
Yeah.
And we have some other great off-Broadway things happening, as Michael mentioned. So anything coming up for you guys that you want to talk about, mention?
Well, I'm going to be, as I think I mentioned before, at the Tennessee Williams Festival in Provincetown, which is the 25th of September through the 29th. Actually, the 26th through the 29th. And they have a lot of really interesting things on the agenda. They tend to traffic in, you know, less famous Williams works, but they are doing a production of Cat on a Hot Tin Roof, which actually started a month or so ago at in Wellfleet on Cape Cod at the Wellfleet Harbor Actors Theater. And this production is notable, if only for the fact that Keir DeLay, who played Brick on Broadway in the 70s opposite Elizabeth Ashley as Maggie and Fred Gwynne as Big Daddy, is now playing Big Daddy. And his wife, Mia Dillon, Tony nominee and very highly respected actress, is playing Big Mama. So that's going to be great. And also I hear, I don't know the details, but in Provincetown, the show is going to be done in their town hall. And if I understand, it's going to be sort of a some kind of an in the round production, I think, with the audience seated above and with the bed placed like right in the middle of the main playing area. So because as is pointed out in the play itself by Big Mama, it's all about what happens in the bed, you know. I mean, that's what the situation is with Maggie and Brick. So I'm really looking forward to that. It sounds like it's going to be amazing. And I'm going to be interviewing Keir and Mia, so I'm really looking forward to talking with them also.
Great, excellent. Aileen, what's happening with you?
Quite week this week. Next week, what I'm really looking forward to is, on the 21st, there's a performance of Charlie Rosen's Broadway Big Band. In case I haven't raved about Charlie Rosen enough, he arranges Broadway tunes and some pop hits and standards for a 17-piece band, and gets some cool Broadway stars to sing with him. So he's going to have Casey Levy and Daniel Breaker performing with him this time, among others. And it is great fun. It's going to be at 54 Below on the 21st, the late show. So I'm really looking forward to that. Those shows are really good times.
Excellent. That sounds like a lot of fun. All right. So I want to remind everybody that you can subscribe to these podcasts by going to the front page of Broadway Star. Broadway Stars. You could, if you went to the right-hand side of Broadway Stars, you see a Broadway Radio section. You can click on all of our recent podcasts there. But also, if you went to BroadwayRadio.com, you would be able to see the show notes for all the things that we have on Broadway Radio. You can see all the old shows if you want to catch up with us or see currently what's happening. You also have contact information for Michael, Aileen, and me, as well as links to some of the things that we've talked about today. We also are played on Broadway World Radio. Broadway World plays us Wednesdays at noon, Thursdays at 7 p.m., and Saturdays at 2 p.m. You could subscribe to us on iTunes or on the Stitcher app. And Peter will be returning with us next week. So on behalf of Aileen McKenna and Michael Portantier, this is James Marino saying thanks so much for listening to Broadway Radio's This Week on Broadway. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Bye.
Mom and Pop, the bakery. Now this town's just a collection of some old guy's memories. Just a ghost upon a ghost of all these used to be's. But if it looks the same everywhere you roam, tell me, how do you know when you've gotten home? How do you know when you've gotten home? One coffee cup, one Kmart brand, chicken nuggets served throughout the land.
The fresh bread smell from the bakery that used to fill my car.
The light from the all-night diner shining like my true North Star. And all the thousand other little things that make us who we are.
Walmart,
drive-in,
Walgreens,
mom and pop,
Wendy's,
Applebee's,
Starbucks,
library,
Sam's Club,
the Hobbit Tree,
Denny's,
the Honeybee,
memories,
only memories.
Of how we used to be.
Walmart's.